But so first guest to make a second appearance on the Willcast series, Mr. Nick Putty.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome back. So what's the brewing process here at Wisconsin Lighting Lab look like 3 years in? How's it going?
Good. Things have been learned.
Yeah.
Lots of things. Actually, even recently, things have been learned. I've had 25 brew sessions now, somewhere on there.
Has it been about 3 years?
I think we're at about two and a half-ish.
Okay.
Because there's the acquirement of all the materials, getting everything built out, testing, figuring stuff out as we went. But
so that's about one a month.
Yeah. I typically shoot for about one a month, one every 3 to 4 weeks. Now that the world is kind of normal again.
Hopefully pointed that direction.
Yeah,
at least,
we're going to try to ramp up production a little bit more, try to get more of a stockpile.
Yep.
But even in the last couple months, more things have been learned on the system. I thought I had two pumps that just flat out failed. But much like as we were talking earlier with race cars, you have to rebuild stuff once in a while. So I have to just rebuild the pumps, couple thrust washers that just weren't there anymore.
So are two pumps required for the system, or is one a redundant backup pump?
So one is just circulating water for the hot water tank. So it just maintains pressure or temperatures, just constantly keeps water moving, so there's no hot spots. And then the second pump is the work pump, I guess you could call it. It's the one that's transferring whatever fluids, whether it be water or beer or into the fermenter and cooling it down. So that's the one that does the bulk of the work, but at the same time, they're both running about the same amount. One's always circulating water, one's always circulating beer. So for them to actually both go out at the end of the same brew session was actually kind of expected, and at the same time nice, because I didn't have another one fail the next brew session or 2 weeks later or whatever. So I've talked to our local marketing department, and they ordered me some parts, which actually came early this week. So I'm going to actually rebuild those probably Thursday, and then get everything cleaned up again, thorough cleaning, and start brewing some more beer.
So you're not only brewmaster, but also the maintenance department.
Yes.
for the brew system as well.
As you know, we all wear many hats.
This is very true.
That's one of mine.
Well, cool. So have you been happy with the spike system overall?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Talking about things I learned, that was actually one of the things I reached out to them and said, hey, you know, do you have replacement pumps? I don't see anything on your website. And kind of how we work, they sent me some troubleshooting guides, like, hey, here's a really good video, kind of similar to what we do here. And it was some guy that owns a brew shop that I think sells their equipment and had one of their pumps sitting on the table and said, you know, something goes bad, look at these four things. I took it apart, and there's a little bit of grain that was kind of caked in there, nothing too serious, but that was probably when it stopped working. It just didn't pump it out the rest of the way. But yeah, this little Teflon thrust washer about the size of your fingernail is just flat out wasn't there anymore.
Did you ask for anchor bolts to pre-ship on that pump?
No, but I did. I did have marketing ask me, do you need all of these? I'm like, yes, I need two of them now, and I'm going to use the other two for spares.
Nice.
So
inventory.
Yes, exactly.
Cool. So lessons learned. Is it on our marketing and sales process? Is it, you know, it sounds like some maintenance lessons learned. Is it technical? You know, the brew process, or is it kind of all of the above?
Yeah. Some of the stuff that kind of got passed along in that video, that actually wasn't really aware of, that they, you know, kind of mentioned, just when you're running the pumps, going back to my driveway days, you know, you're constantly, you're with the paddle and you're moving grain around, things like that. And one of the things they absolutely suggested was not doing that when you're running the pumps, because you'll pick up extra grain. And that's probably why that thrust washer actually, just busted up and just disappeared. So, just learning more just about the process, you know, simple things like that where, you know, maybe I only have to replace that, you know, every 50 batches or something like that. So,
okay. And as far as systems are concerned, you know, say we wanted to, I think we talked a little bit about this last time, but say we wanted to have, yeah, you know, 5 times the output. Is it just a scaled up system?
Yep.
Okay, so everything's just bigger, faster, more volume.
Yeah, more electricity. You know, we talk, you know, about sports lighting. You know, at some point you have to bump it up to 480 because of amp draw. That honestly, that's probably what we'd have to look at. It would be,
so the power requirements change a little bit.
Yeah, it'd probably be, it would probably be a 480. The heating elements go up in size, wattage. So it'd be a little bit of an upgrade than what we have in the panel there, but you know. Get an electrician and they'll get it wired up for you. But yeah, it's literally scaling up the pots, the grain, the amount of hops, the water. You know, your efficiency, when we talk about LEDs, you know, your efficiency still stays right about the same. So we run at about 80 to 85% ish with our grain efficiency, meaning that we get about 85% of the sugar out of the grain, which then in turn makes beer. So going to a larger scale, you're still looking at the same efficiency, just you're making that much more at that point.
Hmm. Nice. So a home brewer that's looking to scale up to the system that we have, you know, what are some of the tips and the tricks and some of the hardest lessons learned beyond, you know, pump maintenance, but how could you help somebody streamline their learning process?
Read as much as you can. Trial and error. Don't be afraid of it.
Yeah.
Just like any sort of hobby, message boards are great, forums, Google.
Instagram?
Yeah, honestly, Instagram. I know you follow Spike like I do. Yeah. They've got great resources on that sort of stuff. They'll even share other people's homebrew setups, which, you know, just seeing how somebody else does it. You know, we utilize pumps to move fluids, you know, from one container to another, where somebody that's in their garage, in their driveway, just utilizes gravity. You know, you put your bigger tank up here and you slowly step it down until the bottom one is the fermenter, and you never used a single pump at all. So, constantly try stuff, constantly read. Don't be afraid to experiment.
Yep. Do you have any favorite recipes?
The current rendition of the Will Ale is probably my favorite, which is actually a tweaked recipe of my personal recipe, which is, what does the hop say, which is a little one that I had Tyler help me name at some point, made a label for in my homebrew days. But it's real flavorful, a lot of good feedback on it. It's got some hops there, but it's not overly hoppy for the people that, you know, the idea of hops just turns them off.
They don't want that IPA stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so it's got some good flavor there, but if you're what they like to call hophead, you get that too. So it's good. It's something that we've gotten good feedback on. And then what I like to call my pseudo lager beer, which is a beer we don't lager, will be another one I'm going to make. Not sure if this batch, possibly the next batch, but that was another one we got good feedback on. In fact, that was one of the ones that we sent a decent amount to one of our sales reps. So
nice.
And they said they really liked it.
So have you got repeat requests for the same beer from certain reps, or it's kind of they taste it, they like it, and we just send it at random, or do we have any?
Yeah, it's been kind of at random.
Okay.
The one we just canned is actually what we had at our picnic out at Lakeside there, which was a summer wheat beer. That's the one I also say it is also a cursed beer, because that's the one that took out those two pumps, and I've had issues with that recipe every time I bring it. But that one turned out well, actually, this time, so that might be a repeat. I have a real simple, again, good-tasting IPA that actually went over pretty well. A little smoother, again, not overly hoppy. I know some people out there have requests for porters and stouts, so we're going to try to work those into the winter months, because that's definitely stout season, and get a nice, thick, heavy beer they could sip in the middle of January as opposed to July. So
do you have a coffee beer recipe at all?
I want to do one.
Yeah.
I'd like to utilize some local coffee roaster.
Yeah,
there's
awesome.
A few in the area.
Yeah.
That I'd like to try it. There's also, I don't, I don't know if I'll necessarily make a mead, but I do want to make another gluten-free beer with some honey. And there's a guy I actually played hockey with as a kid that we've gotten back in touch with in the last several years. He's got like a small hobby farm that he's got bees. In fact, he gave me some of the honey he had that my girl's been eating up on English muffins like nice. Every day for breakfast. So I'm going to use some of that, try to, you know, get some local ingredients in there. He actually is interested in our spent grain because he's got chickens. He's like, I'll feed it to the chickens. I got a compost pile. Because up to this point, we've just been tossing it, and I'd like to see that get used in other,
sure.
other places. Tyler and I have talked about making, like, getting it dried and making, like, a granola out of it, but that's pretty labor-intensive.
So what's left? You have sugar.
Yep.
There's, you know, 25% of the sugar is left, but what else is the grain?
It's, you know, it's barley, yep. it's wheat, pale ale malt, you know, yeah, just different grains. You know, they're ground up. The consistency is similar to like ground up oatmeal,
yep.
you know, so it's still pretty coarse yet. You know, so you could dry it out. Some brew pubs, like if you get down to like Milwaukee, they'll take it, they'll grind it up into a flour, and that's their pizza dough.
Nice.
You know, and depending on what you use, you know, you can still make it, you know, gluten-free, depending on what, you know, what grains you pick. I guess not specifically grains, that's pretty much all gluten, but, you know, stuff along those lines. Yep. So.
Yeah, I mean, from my view, 2 or 3 years in, I think it's been overwhelmingly positive. You know, I think it always amazes me every time we bring somebody through, could be a vendor, could be a customer, you know, could be, you know, somebody we're interviewing. Everybody always wants to know about the brew room. So, you know, we're geeking out about, you know, products and the company and everything else. And like they stop in their tracks as soon as they see the brew room. So yeah, it's been a great, you know, a great part of the operation. You know, I overwhelmingly positive, you know, I think, you know, maybe some people were a little bit concerned about, you know, having a brewery associated with, you know, with the operation. But, you know, my view is always, it's like, if you're in Napa, California, you know, I'm sure it'd be okay to have a winery, you know, site. We're in Wisconsin, you know, it's just part of the, you know, part of what we do, making lights and making beer. So, but yeah, I think it's been great. I know, from a sales standpoint, you know, sending out free 6-packs with custom labels, you know, just been overwhelmingly, you know, positive, and you know, certainly is you know, a great talking point. And then when, you know, people come through to be able to enjoy, you know, the operation and, you know, you know, have a glass of beer while doing it, it's pretty cool as well.
It's crazy. Some of the people that have toured through here, whether they're reps, contractors, future hires, what have you, it's amazing how many they'll pop their head in and say that they've, you know, they either homebrew themselves, they've dabbled in it a little bit, or, you know, their father, or their cousin, or, you know, somebody like that. You know, it actually circles all the way back to when you sent some beer to somebody up at Musa, and
we got to get that guy on the
guy took a picture, sent it to his son, and his son worked at Spike. Like
talk about a small
circle.
World.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we got to have, we've talked about it, but now we're kind of getting back in the Wheelcast swing of things. Getting somebody from Spike would be awesome.
Yeah, I want to say his name's Brian. I know we have his email, yeah. But yeah, we'll definitely have to reach out to him again.
So what are some of your like equipment upgrade dreams? I know the Spike has come out with a system, or a new system since we've implemented this one, but do you have kind of like a vision in your head of what the next level might be?
So one thing I'm actually looking at, probably doing sometime soon, is I'd still keep the exhaust fan in there because it does generate a lot of heat in there, but kind of looking at it up at the ceiling, we don't have water damage or anything like that, but you can see where there's two nail heads kind of peeking through the drywall, where I think over time a lot of moisture in that room, even though we have a very strong exhaust fan, could be at some point damaging to the room, the ceiling, the walls.
Can we check for mold?
You know, I think we're good at there, but over time it certainly could be, you know, could potentially be a concern. And Spike actually has a system where So basically a lid that goes on your boil kettle, and then there's a tube that goes up and down, and you pump water into the side of it. And basically the steam goes up through there. The water kind of condenses it and just drops it down, which I'd probably just have to drop down in the sink because it's right there.
Yep.
But eliminates the need for a very strong exhaust fan.
Yep.
It literally takes the majority of the moisture out of the air.
Yep.
Pumps it down in the drain or pumps it down into a bucket or whatever. So something like that is probably something we'll look at implementing, especially as we ramp up production again. I don't want, to ruin our nice walls, in this nice building because, moisture just isn't escaping as efficiently or as it could be. So that's one potential upgrade probably would implement sooner than later. And then the other thing is actually getting a chilling system for the fermenter. So right now the process of carbonation comes out of the fermenter, it goes into kegs, and then we put it in the kegerator. I crank the CO2 up and then let it sit for a week. And it works. I mean, it's the way that most homebrewers do it. It's a real, really efficient way to do it. You can control the CO2 levels pretty well. Now that we have that dialed in, I don't think we've had any real issues with overcarbonated beers. So that's dialed in pretty well. But what we could do by chilling the fermenter itself is carbonate it within the fermenter, so it skips that transfer, which also helps eliminate potential infections. Because anytime you're moving liquid around, there's always that chance of, some sort of germ or something like that in there. And generally, that's actually how sour beers are basically made, except for you're purposely infecting the beer, where if you don't want to infect it, you try to keep everything as clean as possible, which obviously I do a lot of. But if you keep it in the fermenter, you can carbonate in there, you just have to chill it down, and you can actually take your carbonation time from a week down to a day. So I could start chilling it, after half a day, get it to the temperature, put it on CO2, and then the following day it's ready to can. So you're eliminating a whole week of, production in a sense. So, as we like to talk about efficiency, making the whole...
Lean beer production.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. Almost in the sense of just-in-time production, if you want to get into that aspect of it. So from dumping grain into the water for the first time to canning it, sending it out the door, we could potentially be talking less than 2 weeks. We're at about 3. So that's kind of more of a down-the-road sort of thing that I would really look at, because the system we have in place right now, it works, it's fine. There's no real issue there. But the steam catcher, as I'd like to call it, that's probably the main upgrade to kind of look at down the road. And then who knows capacity after that. But the systems has fit us pretty well at this point.
Nice. Well, very cool. So what did you bring along?
So I picked these my lunch hour here. I've been growing these for about 3 years now, 4 years now. And much as I'm sure you can relate now that you have two children running around the house, finding time to see that, get your extracurricular activities, your hobbies in kind of takes a back road to their extracurricular activities. So yeah. I haven't had a chance to ever harvest my hops. They're at a point right now where they're actually very pretty much ready to go.
What's the cycle time on the plant?
So it is a perennial. So I mean, it grows back every year.
Yep.
Every spring I cut down the old vines, which vines with a B though. So some people think it's a vine, but it's a bine. I don't know why the difference is terminology, but whatever. So cut those down every spring. They'll start shooting up. You kind of cut those back, the fresh ones, and then the hardier ones kind of come up and just let them grow up a string or lattice structure of some type. And the hops will show up right around early July, mid-July, probably about this size. There's certainly some, kind of bigger ones that grow over time. And, once you get to be about early to mid-September, they'll start kind of drying out just a little bit, kind of how these are now. And you pick them, you can dry them in a food dehydrator. Some people do in their oven. Some people just put them on a screen, just let them air dry. So you try to get about, I want to say I saw like, you try to get like 60 to 70% of the moisture out of them. Because otherwise they're real watered down and you don't get as much of the flavor. You have to use that much more. So I'm going to try to pick them this week and let them air dry for about a week. And I'll weigh them, see how much I have in weight. A typical batch of beer, I use about 4 ounces of hops in about a 10-gallon batch. So, and those are compressed pellet form, where I'll probably need like an entire bag worth if I use fresh hops. So we'll see what happens. But I mean, you know, if you rip them apart, you know, they're...
Is this a certain family?
So like this is a Cascade hop. Cascade. I tried to grow both Cascade and Centennial. My Centennial hops never took off, but the Cascade, both of them I picked because they're a little higher on the hoppy side. You know, this one was still home brewing, so of course I was thinking IPAs because that's primarily what I drink. But not that I'm a beer snob to IPA, but it's what I tend to lean towards. So that's why I picked those two particular hops. The Cascade was the only one that grew. But it's a versatile hop. You know, you can make just a simple pale ale or even like the Will Ale we do where it's not, you know, it's not an overly hoppy beer. It's versatile. They'll call it a flavoring hop and a bittering hop. So if you throw it into the early part of the boil, it's a bittering hop. If you throw it in towards the end, it's a flavoring hop. And it's citrusy, little bit of dankness to it, going back to our earlier conversation we got walked in. But yeah, just a good all around hop.
So what are your favorite non Nick Putty brewed beers right now?
Pseudo Sue, which is made by Toppling Goliath. Jordan has a relative, I forget the relation.
Where are they out of? Are they Wisconsin?
Down in Iowa?
Oh, they're in Iowa. Okay.
Yeah. Him and Jake actually brought me back some beer. They had a road trip down to
nice.
A sports job site. I forget which job it was off the top of my head, but yeah, he's got a relative that works there, so he gets beer from there, and he said all the time, so I'm like, yes please.
That's a good hookup.
Yeah, which funny that I met up with a friend of mine earlier this past weekend. She got me a collaboration beer that they did with Central Waters, which is up towards Stevens Point.
Yep.
Barrel aged beer that was not cheap. So she hooked me up with that, and there's the Toppling Goliath version, I guess they're going to put out in October, so I was going to tell Jordan about that. But that's like a top three beer for me. Bell's beer, Bell's Brewing out of Michigan, just about anything they make is right up there. I try to avoid the larger conglomerates, but there's still some out there that are still decent beers. I mean, really, if you look at, like, you know, say Sam Adams and Dogfish Head, they've now combined, and they're probably bigger than some of the macro brews that
are out
there.
They still private? Are they private equity owned, or is it still family owned? Or
it's still family owned.
Okay.
Sam, who started Dogfish Head, and then I forget the guy's name who started up Sam Adams, but yeah, they're both still privately owned.
Okay.
The guy that founded Sam Adams, actually, I found this out several years back, has like a fund where he will help start up breweries.
Really?
Like, yeah. He's very much into the brew industry.
He's a craft guy.
Yeah. He wants to see other people, you know, try to build their own brand, you know, try to get out there and, you know, continue to, you know, kind of edge out some of the macro brews. And don't get me wrong, I'm not above a Busch Light on a Sunday night hockey league. So, you know, so I will literally drink if it's cold. I will certainly try it. I've had a pizza beer and it was as awful as it was. I still tried it. So, but
it sounds great.
Oh, not good.
So, do you see the market? Is there still like a hard shift towards the cider direction?
Honestly, the cider's been pushed aside.
Has it really?
It's all seltzers right now.
Seltzer, okay.
Yeah. I don't quite understand it. I mean, I get the appeal of it. It's, you know, it's refreshing on a hot summer day, which, you know, beer used to be that. Now it's something else. But I've had a few here and there, and I get the appeal, but at the same time, I just like the taste of a good beer, you know. So every major beer manufacturer, whether it's craft or macro brew is making some form of seltzer.
Yep.
Because you almost have to, otherwise you're just literally just throwing money away.
Yeah, you got
to
ride that wave.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you and I are old enough, at least myself anyway, to know that, you know, all this is what wine coolers were 10, 15, 20 years ago. Honestly. Bartles and James, if anybody...
History repeats and it rhymes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Anybody that remembers Bartles and James commercials...
Foil wrap.
Yeah, on exactly. Top. That's all we're looking at right now.
Well, man, thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for all you do. We'll chat again soon.
Sounds good.
All right, cool.